Corn demand via the ethanol industry appears to be on the rise, as is the corn market, and also we have a USDA report tomorrow.
Live from a hazy shade of spring via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Ken Morrison from Morrison on the Markets. And right after the news, Oliver Slope from Blue Line Futures with some perspective. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, filling in for Chip from Standard Grain, Varsity Joe Vaclavic.
All right, I'm happy to be back. Davis, how you doing, my man?
Happy to have you there. A hazy shade of spring here. It's cooler. It's overcast. Wet-ish. Not raining, but just sort of damp. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Give me beautiful. Some good news.
Well, It's beautiful down south here. It's beautiful. It's sunny. It's probably 72. These are the nicest days in Tennessee before it gets really hot, which is going to happen a lot sooner than I'd like it to. But it starts like in May. I mean, we'll be in the 80s and the humidity will be, you know, off the charts. But it's beautiful today, my friend.
I'm glad to hear that. It sounds like good fishing weather. What are you doing here?
Actually, my boat's in the shop. It's a long story, but I was rear-ended on the interstate by an impaired driver, is the nice way to put it. And my boat's laid up for a little bit. I'm not real happy about it.
Are you all right?
But everybody was fine. And that's the good thing, because it was one of those deals where it could have been like a really terrible accident. Everybody involved was probably lucky that it wasn't. So happy to say that. Not happy that the boat is laid up indefinitely, but I'll be back on the water soon, I think.
Okay. We'll get back at it.
It happens. But anyways, we have Ken Morrison from Morrison on the Markets on the show today. We wanted to talk in particular, I mean, we'll talk about the USDA report a little bit. We'll talk about, today's rally in the market. We really, Ken and I have been talking a little bit about just demand moving forward for these crops. And specifically when we talk about demand, like the ethanol industry, what does China look like come 21-22? Things along those lines are kind of the line of questioning that I've got set up for Ken. We'll probably touch on some other stuff too, but should be a really good conversation. Davis, do you want to get to the news?
Yes, why don't I? Let me just increase my font here. Oh, there we go. Wheat futures led an overnight rebound that carried through the day session. Traders are becoming wary of ongoing dryness in the northern plains and Canadian prairies. A cold snap in Europe also raised concerns for crop conditions. New crop export sales jumped to 530,000 metric tons, topping trade estimates. China was the top buyer of 260,000 metric tons during the report week. July hard red winter wheat 13¾ cents higher, 583¾. July soft red gained 14½ cents to 630½. September spring wheat 16½ cents higher, 656¼. Joe.
Yeah, the spring wheat market has a story, I think. These dry conditions, I think USDA said 78% of the spring wheat crop is going to be planted in some sort of drought stage. And we know it's been severely dry up in, say, North Dakota and those type of areas. Now, is this all going to be enough to support the winter wheat complex where we've seen a big improvement in conditions? That's tough to say.
I saw the word mega drought posted mega in a couple drought. Of different places. Have you heard about this? Is this a thing, or was I just reading weird websites again?
It sounds fantastic, but I mean, it sounds incredibly interesting. But no, I've not heard a mega drought tossed around, and you won't hear it. You won't hear me tossed around, I promise.
Okay. Good. Corn futures shot higher in today's trade, with nearbys posting double digit gains on the day. Corn export sales of 757,000 metric tons for 2021 and 50,000 metric tons for 21-22 were within expectations but down from recent strong reports. Areas of South America ceded to Safrina corn are forecast to be dry in the near term, and the need for rainfall there added support to futures. Traders also worked to position themselves ahead of tomorrow's USDA reports. May corn futures 19¼ cents higher, 579¾. July added 16 cents to close at 562. December corn closed at 494¾. That's up 9¼ cents on the day. Man, what got into the corn market today, Joe?
Well, we do have a report tomorrow. I think there is some expectation that the report would be friendly. I know that there's a lot of talk about ethanol and a couple of these bigger plants coming back online. So maybe some more demand via the ethanol industry. I think farmers are a lot more heavily sold in regard to, say, old crop corn in particular this year. You just don't have that natural seller in the market that we've had the last 5 or 6 years where farmers are sitting on a whole lot. It's got a whole lot going for it.
Well, soybean futures were confined to their narrow trading range, adding just slight gains today. USDA reported old crop soybean sales showed a net reduction of 92,500 metric tons, but new crop sales totaled 338,600 metric tons, with China buying 264,000 metric tons. The overall total exceeded expectations. Traders took notice of a report from ANEC forecasting record soybean shipments out of Brazil during this month. May bean futures 6.5 cents higher, 14.15 and a quarter. July gained 6 3/4 to 14.09 3/4. November bean futures closed at 12.73 and a quarter, up 2.5 cents today compared to corn and wheat. Kind of a yawn in the beans, but it felt constructive, Joe.
It wasn't a terrible performance. The negative in the beans, if anything, today were those net cancellations of old crop soybean sales in the export sales report. And China did cancel some, but then also bought some for new crops. So you could say they were canceled or rolled potentially. That was the one negative that kind of stuck out to me today, where we actually saw a good export number in corn.
May cotton, 191 points higher, 81.41. December cotton firmed 108 points to 81.12. Fat cattle futures mixed on indications of higher cash cattle trade amid lackluster export sales. April live cattle gained an even dollar to 124.15. June cattle down 25 cents, 125.02.5. April feeders 50 cents lower, 147.12.5. Lean hog futures continued to rally in most contracts on support from higher cash and cutout values. April lean hogs 60 cents higher, 103.47.5. June hogs up 80 cents, 108.70. Joe.
Let's go to my old sweet home, Chicago. Let's talk to Oliver Slope from Blue Line Futures. Oliver, are you there?
I'm here. How are we doing, Joe?
I'm doing great. A big rally in the corn market today. What do you make of this deal?
Well, I think along the same lines of what you had mentioned, no natural sellers. We know we got producers and commercials heavily short this market and funds heavily long this market. Typically, we look for those to kind of come in together a little bit, but with the recent expansion of fund position limits, they've got some powder to add. We've got that breakout move above 560 in corn, which I think sparked a little bit more of that move that we saw today. We only poked our head out above that 560 level, I think, two times so far this year, back at the February USDA report and last week's USDA report. What stopped us from going any higher is a lack of follow-through. So follow-through here in the next couple of sessions is going to be very important. If we can defend that 560 level, previous resistance now becomes support, I think the bulls have a pretty decent advantage here, and we could make a run at that psychologically significant $6 handle.
The winter wheat market had been trending lower for several weeks now, and we saw a nice rally today. Is this a flash in the pan deal, or do you see anything here that leads you to believe that this could be the beginning of some higher prices potentially?
You know, that's something we've been talking about in our daily commentary. We've been mostly bearish since the start of the year, but we neutralize our bias in our morning reports and the psychological defense that we defended earlier in the week, and we're getting some nice follow through here today. We've been trading a lot in the Chicago contract. 630 was previous breakout point all the way back to December, January became support and was the breakdown point in March. So a lot of interaction between buyers and sellers there. Get out above 630, consecutive closes, there's room to run.
Very good. Thank you very much. That's Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures, joining me here today. Joe V, filling in for Chip. Davis is here. Ken Morrison from Morrison on the Markets will be with me when we get back. We're going to talk about tomorrow's report. We're going to talk about the 21-22 marketing year and what we can look for in terms of the demand side of the balance sheets. We'll be back on AgriTalk.
You might already know that POET produces 2 billion gallons of bioethanol and 5 million tons of high-protein Dakota Gold animal feed each year. But did you also know that POET uses the same process to produce a suite of other bioproducts, like purified alcohol for cosmetics and sanitizing products, renewable CO2, and oil for renewable diesel? The market for green products made from crops harvested right here in the Midwest is growing at an unprecedented rate, and that means even more reliable domestic demand for your grain. Farmers aren't just feeding and fueling the world. They are growing sustainable solutions that protect the environment and preserve our way of life for future generations. POET believes in the power of agriculture to meet the world's most pressing needs. Learn more at poet.com/products.
AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Hey everybody, welcome back to AgriTalk. Joe V, Standard Grain, filling in for Chip today. If you guys have questions, comments, observations, hit me up on Twitter. You can hashtag us, hashtag AgriTalk. You can tweet at me directly at Standard Grain. Davis, you know who wrote all the music for that movie, right?
Who wrote all the music for That Thing You Do?
The guy from Fountains of Wayne, the guy who wrote Stacy's Mom.
Oh, really? I love Stacy's Mom. She's got it going on.
He just died recently, like in the last year or two, I believe. Right? Yeah, but he wrote all the music for that. Interesting trivia fact you can put in your back pocket there, big guy.
I love it. I'll put it in my front pocket, baby. That's right where
it's going. Do it. All right, let's bring Ken on. We've got Ken Morrison from Morrison on the Markets with us today. Ken, are you there?
I'm there. I'm here.
What's going on today, my friend? I'm doing great.
You brought up the subject of music, and so I want to hear about your what do they still call it? Cutting a record?
Yeah, we do. Although I'm getting older, so maybe the younger kids call it something different. But yeah, I did. I was in a studio here in Nashville with a band last week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and we did cut a record, as you put it, and that's probably how I would put it too. I'll have some stuff for you guys on Twitter sometime in the next couple weeks, I think.
Look forward to it. That move to Nashville has been okay, huh?
Yeah, it's been good. Weather's good. Music's good. Fishing's good. It's all good. Let's talk about this USDA report tomorrow first. Now, this, I don't think people think this is going to be like a blockbuster report, but there's always the potential for a surprise there. What do you see as being the big kind of feature items here?
You know, I looked at the, I kind of think the market is going to depend on how the number comes in relative to expectations. And I thought the expectations for corn, quite frankly, are kind of a sandbag. I mean, last month, for example, the estimate was for a carryout number of 1.45 billion. The USDA came forward and didn't change their February number from 1.5. So this month, the average is a little under 1.4. So call it, you know, in round numbers, 60 million difference, really, from right where the estimate was in a month ago. But yet we've sold, what, 5 or 6 million, 7 million tons of corn since that time. We've now officially exceeded the 66 million ton full-year export estimate, as if we never would, but of course it's now official. I think in order for it to be a bullish market or to sustain maybe today's rally, I think the carryout number in corn has to be like 1.3 or less. I don't think a 1.4 is going to surprise anybody.
I'll make a statement here and you tell me if I'm crazy. The corn market's been trading a 1.2 carryout for like 2 months. Is that crazy?
I don't think that's crazy at all. I mean, the bias has certainly been to a lower number than what USDA has been able to concede so far. And so, you know, I think you and I are saying the same thing. I think anything even close to the average estimate of slightly under 1.4 is going to be a disappointment, and people are going to be throwing stones at USDA once again. So.
Or could it be, Ken, that maybe the carryout is not as tight as we think, and there are just some other factors at play here, like outside money, general commodity interest or interest in commodity markets? I mean, is that as big of a factor as I think it could be?
Maybe I'm expressing my own bias here, Joe, but
that's why you're here.
I think we can sell another 3 million tons of corn, and our actual export shipments are still going to be 66 million tons, the same as USDA's got it plugged in for. And I say that because China is still, every week, falling further and further behind the pace of lifting this, you know, monstrous 14 million tons of corn that we've got on the books yet to ship. You know, they've got to more than double in the next 21 and a half weeks. They've got to more than double weekly shipments of what they've taken year to date in corn. So, you know, the bottom line is I think we're going to carry over a lot of sales of corn. So that's why I say I think we can sell another 3 or 4 million tons of corn, and we're still going to just ship 66 million tons of corn, exactly what the forecast is.
Okay, so we did see in the export sales report this morning that China essentially, I mean, they basically kind of rolled some beans into new crop, if you want to look at it that way. Is that a precursor to what you think could happen in corn?
I don't know that it will be. First of all, let me address the bean thing. I don't think the bean thing is a roll. I think okay. It's probably two separate transactions. I mean, okay. the opportunity for an arbitrage in soybeans, U.S. sell U.S. and or sell back U.S. and buy Brazil. I mean, that's just the only thing that surprised me about today's cancellation of the soybeans is that it hasn't A, happened sooner, and B, hasn't happened in larger numbers. I think there's going to be more cancellation. So I look at today as simply a couple of different transaction opportunities. You know, I think you know, buying September and certainly October forward U.S. beans once Brazil presumably is going to be drained again by sometime late in the fall. I think that's, you know, we're going to have a pretty good free runway, if you will, on soybean exports, at least until, you know, I'm going to call it October through maybe January this year. But no, I think there's going to be more soybean cancellations. I mean, look, the easiest way to import soybeans is to cancel sales that you have on the books and don't ship them, right? That's right. A lot easier than just importing them to Wilmington, North Carolina or Norfolk, Virginia.
I also have been surprised that there had not been cancellations earlier, because if you look at the export price dynamic, I mean, it's been a long time since U.S. beans have really been competitive. I mean, the Brazilian offers were out there weeks and weeks ago, and you haven't really seen a whole lot of it shake out. I mean, I don't know why that is.
I don't know why that is either. I have a sneaking hunch that, well, yeah, I mean, let's just leave it at that. If I had been on the trading desk, the arbitrage would have been done a month ago. So,
right.
You know, I probably would have left money on the table. I don't know.
Real quickly here in this first segment, it looks like we've got a pretty decent start to the growing season or planting season here in the U.S. Is there anything on the weather front or anything in terms of like actually getting these crops in the ground that you see as being problematic or potentially market impacting at this point in time?
The only thing that has already been talked about this, you know, on your program today, and that is the weather related to spring wheat sowing and maybe the conditions to produce it. But beyond that, I don't see anything that's going to prohibit people from trying to get it in the ground, at least. No.
It looks, I mean, you look at the forecast, and yeah, there's some rain in the forecast, but most of the Corn Belt's not going to see more than, you know, an inch of rain over the next 7 days, and the extended forecast beyond that looks pretty dry as well. It doesn't seem like the market is overly concerned that the crop may go in the ground quickly, and maybe that means more corn acreage. I mean, some people would make that argument.
Well, that's kind of been the traditional history. You know, when weather is great, they just keep on planting. So, yeah, I think that's possible. I tell you, talking about the planting intentions, there is something that still bugs me a little bit about the whole planting intentions number. And,
only one thing?
You know, well, there are several things, but we don't have time to talk about all of them. But, you know, look, I did a total. What I like to do is compare to the March intentions of this year relative to the March intentions of a year ago, right? And so just looking at those numbers for the combined corn, beans, and wheat, there are six states that are below in total acreage of those three crops, below the intentions of a year ago. Now, there's no way that I can reconcile in my mind why you would plan to plant less than you intended to plant a year ago in March, right? So that still bugs me a little bit. And, you know, we've got states like Illinois, Indiana, Kansas, Michigan, Missouri, Nebraska. Those states are anywhere from 30,000 to 200,000 acres below those combined three acreages relative to intentions of a year ago. That still bugs me. And so I'm not going to try to impute what the June planting numbers are going to be, but there's just, you know, I think people are leaning toward the numbers going to be larger, but history says it won't be that much larger.
Yeah, I think that in general, I mean, if I had to guess, I would say that the vast majority of traders and analysts out there are probably already working with a higher acreage number for both corn and soybeans if they're putting balance sheets together. I mean, I know if I was putting my balance sheets together, I would be probably starting with some at least slightly larger acreage numbers, don't you think?
Yeah, and I think that's what I see going on, too, as you say. I think the bias is for a few more acres in corn and beans come the June number, but, you know, we'll just have to see. I mean, this has fooled everybody. And the other thing that bothers me a little bit is, again, total major eight crop acreages is like the lowest since 2015.
Hey, Ken, I'm going to cut you right there. We're going to run to a break. We'll pick this up when we get back. Guys, Joe V filling in for Chip with Ken Morrison here on AgriTalk. We'll be back in a couple minutes, guys.
Time now for some headlines ripped from Pro Farmers. First thing today, temperatures have dipped below zero in areas of France since Tuesday, raising concerns about damage to that country's crops. INEC expects nearly a 15% year-over-year jump in Brazilian soybean exports for April. The Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer climbed to the highest reading for the barometer since it registered a record high in October. According to the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, global food prices are at their highest level since June 2014. President Biden willing to negotiate on the proposed corporate tax rate increase that's intended to help pay for his infrastructure plan. And from March 29 to April 2, the average pork price in 16 provincial regions tracked by China's ag ministry dropped 6.4%. To get more on this, go to tryprofarmer.com. That's tryprofarmer.com. Do it.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Happy Thursday. Joe V filling in for Chip. We've got Davis. We've got Ken Morrison from Morrison on the Markets. If you guys want to get a hold of us, hashtag AgriTalk on Twitter, or you can tweet at me at Standard Grain. Davis.
Yes.
Do you have some news for us?
Yes. Let's see. July hard red winter wheat, 13¾ cents higher, 583¾. July soft red up 14½ cents today, 630½. May corn futures, 19¼ cents higher, 579¾. December corn closed at 494¾, up 9¼ cents on the day. May soybean futures, 6½ cents higher, 1415¼. November bean futures closed at 1273¼. That's up 2½ cents on the day. May cotton was 191 points higher, 81.41. April live cattle gained an even dollar, 124.15. April feeders 50 cents lower, 147.12½. And June lean hogs gained 80 cents to close at 108.70. That's a quick market recap. Back to you, Joe.
Thank you, Davis. We've got Ken Morrison from Morrison on the Markets. Ken, we talked before the show and we said that we wanted to discuss the new crop situation, 21-22, going out past August into that September timeframe, corn and soybean demand. I think there's a ton of unknowns right now, just in my opinion. Would you agree?
I would agree with that, Joe. But one thing is going to be certain, and I'm going to give you a best bet, no-brainer, here's what's going to happen deal, okay? Have you ever had one of those on your program? Can't lose sort of thing?
No.
I can check the archives, but I don't think so. This may be an AgriTalk first.
Go for it.
Well, I may be the first, but here's a couple of things. First of all, we're going to have to live with the March planting intentions at least until June 30th, Okay, so that means we won't see USDA change the acreage number from the March intentions until July. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, here's the best bet, no-brainer. Here's what's going to happen. USDA will lower U.S. soybean demand in their first May S&D.
Versus the 2021 is what you're saying? Versus the ag outlook.
Versus the ag outlook and versus 2021. And here's why. The acreage number ensures that we cannot simply make those kind of total use numbers that they had plugged in at Ag Outlook, which already were about 40 million bushels lower than 2021. So to do so, even plugging in the change in acreage, you know, the USDA had used 90 million acres. We got 87.6. So plugging in the March intentions acreages, the USDA yield used at Ag Outlook, we would lower their supply side by 120 million bushels, which using the total use number that they used at Ag Outlook would leave us with an ending year carryout of 25 million bushels, which is why I say it is a sure bet that USDA will have no choice but to reduce U.S. demand in their first May outlook for 21-22.
So what you're saying, Ken, if I hear you correctly, is that USDA is not afraid in their May report, the initial new crop balance sheet, to give us an incredibly bearish number like they did in corn last year, but they are afraid to give us an incredibly bullish number.
Yeah, I mean, I look back, Joe, at the first May S&D that USDA published. The lowest carryout to use that they've ever used since 2007 was a 4% carryout to use in soybeans, 4%. And so I'm telling you, they're not going to use, certainly not going to use a 1%, 25 million bushel carryout. I don't know what they're going to use, but my guess is they'll probably try to come in at no less than what the carryout number that they reflect probably tomorrow, right? So let's call it 120 million for the sake of discussion. So whatever they have to do to get to a carryout number of 120 million, that suggests to me that they're going to have to lower their usage number by around 90 to 100 million bushels for starters. So 120 million bushel. Again, if people are paying attention, they should already recognize this. I see people out here talking about and referencing the USDA Ag Outlook S&D. Well, that's ridiculous because we don't have the acreage that they assumed in that. And they're not going to project a 25 million bushel carryout.
Right. Okay. So that's US.
Go ahead.
Continue. Okay. So as I say, that's USDA methodology. Let's talk about what you actually think may happen during the 21-22 market year. I mean, we can start with soybeans. This would be my biggest question. I think the crush is probably going to stay good. China is a huge question mark, given that they were such an enormous buyer of corn and soybeans this year. Is this a repeatable deal that China just did?
You're talking about soybeans now, right?
Yeah, you could talk beans specifically, but corn also.
Yeah, let's talk beans because I think they're kind of two separate issues.
Okay.
First of all, I mean, the bean S&D that you publish in May is so damn difficult because you don't have a clue what Brazil is going to produce, you know, 6 to 8 months from now, right? Mm. And so that's always going to be the key. But, however, we're already beginning to see ag attachés publish acreage estimates for Brazil and crop estimates for Brazil, which I saw yesterday. And they're suggesting, of course, once again, Brazil's going to grow more soybeans than they did this year. So I think the bottom line is my export number for the U.S. 21-22 is probably going to be something closer to, let's call it, 2 billion bushel as opposed to 2.2 or 2.25. That's kind of where I would want to be to begin with.
So you're talking a 10% reduction ballpark, which is not the end of the world.
No, that's not the end of the world. And again, I don't I hope USDA doesn't try to paint themselves into a corner, but I do think it's important to start looking at these ag attaché reports for 21, 22, because they're going to give you at least, I mean, USDA doesn't have to follow their ag attachés, but at least it gives you some idea of what's being discussed in the country. Now, let's switch over to corn, because I think we have actually a very similar situation in corn as we do in soybeans, except more importantly, we're already beginning. Well, let's start from the start. First of all, again, we've got about 1 million acres less than what USDA had in their ag outlook. Okay, if you want to use 92 million instead of 90.1 or 91.1, I don't think anybody would debate that, and probably a lot of people are going to begin with that kind of number. But, you know, so that's, let's say in the ballpark, that's going to give you somewhere between a 15 and 15.2 billion bushel crop. I think the most important thing about the corn export prospects for 21-22 is, for example, Ukraine, I already see, I saw yesterday, they said that they will get back to a normal production, which will mean an increase of about 8 million tons. So that's 300 million bushel. They said that their exports will be up 8 million tons in 21-22 relative to this year because of the drought and, restricted crop. So, you know, China is taking 40% of everything that Ukraine ships on the corn.
Mm-hmm.
So I think right off the bat, I think USDA's corn export number should probably be kind of wound back a little bit to maybe a number closer to 2.3, 2.4 billion from their 2.6 to 2.65 that they use at Ag Outlook. So that's kind of where I would be. You know, let's call it 300 million bushels less than what the current forecast is for the current year.
Now, that's a pretty drastic reduction potentially, but we're also like we could potentially be getting into a year where we don't have a light crop again, and we have, you know, trend line yields, and ethanol could be back. We did talk about ethanol a little bit, and I had kind of thrown some numbers out there, and I think you did as well.
Yeah, USDA in their Ag Outlook has ethanol, corn for ethanol in 21-22 down about 3% from the 18-19 base, which now
right.
Everybody is using as the, you know, pre-COVID normal.
Right.
I think 5.2 is probably a pretty good place to begin, because there's been some structural changes in the gasoline usage in the U.S. since 18-19.
Yeah.
A lot more electric vehicles are on the road. I don't think, you know, we're not going back to the office and commuting to the office 100% like we did before. So I think 5.2 billion corn for ethanol in 21-22 is a good place to start. You know, it's down a couple of hundred million from 18-19. I think that's okay.
The big the thing that's really interesting about it is that ethanol is now like an item that can actually swing the balance sheets around, whereas in the past it just never had that sort of volatility.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that there is some potential in the current crop year for it to be a little better than what USDA currently says, but it's a little early to, you know, cast that in stone.
Yeah, I gotcha. Hey, Ken, thank you very much for joining us today. If some of the listeners are interested in your work, what is the best place to get a hold of you?
You can find me on Twitter, Morrison on the Markets, and there's a link to my website on that Twitter sign.
Very good. Thank you very much, Ken. Always a pleasure. Guys, that's Ken Morrison from Morrison on the Markets. Joe V filling in for Chip today. If you guys have any questions or comments, observations, tweet at me at Standard Grain or tweet hashtag AgriTalk. And maybe, just maybe, if you're lucky, me and Davis will get to him here in the very last segment here, if we're not too busy. And Davis talks a lot, so I know we may not get to everybody. We'll get to some of you. We'll be back on AgriTalk.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Joe Vaclavic, Standard Grain, filling in for the Chipster today. Good stuff from Ken Morrison, as always. He's one of my favorite guests. Yeah. Davis, sure. I've noticed that gas prices are getting more expensive.
They are.
And you are one of the few people that I know that track fuels and fertilizer and farm. And what's your other four F's? Farm, fuels, fertilizer.
I think Friday was.
Oh, Friday.
Yeah.
He also tracks Fridays. But what do you make about these energy prices here?
Well,
is this going to get real painful this summer?
It is real painful. It already kind of is. Yeah. Yeah.
But if you look at a chart of like retail gasoline, it's really not even bad yet. Like it could get so much worse. Like it was back in, 2011 through 2014 or so when we were like $3.50.
Yes. Well, and when I say it's bad now, I'm more talking about the fertilizer side.
Yeah.
The fuel side.
That's been goofy
and,
for a while.
You know, if I look at the heating oil futures, which is kind of a bellwether a little bit, we've sort of stalled out below $2. The May right now, it's up just slightly on the day at 181, and that's, there's really not much happening in the spreads there. Go to crude oil today, down a penny, 59.76 in the May. Again, the spread's going nowhere. So as far as the fuels side goes, I still feel like travel is probably just a little bit limited. Maybe you can correct me if I'm not correct in that. But I just don't see the level of airline travel, which pulls from the distillate market, which pulls from farm diesel.
Yeah,
you know?
Gasoline demand overall in this country is not back to normal. I think last week we were still like 4% below where we were in 2019, mm-hmm. like pre-COVID. So we're not back yet, but I think that we could be back this summer is my optimistic view on the whole situation, but that's not a good thing for gas prices. I mean, if this thing's really going to start rocking and rolling, you could be well above $3 gas. Crude oil is interesting because, you hear people talk about there's inflation in commodity prices, and crude at 59 is not like super expensive relative to what we've seen. And crude oil is like the one commodity where you could go up to average Joe on the street and he might be able to tell you what crude oil is like ballpark per barrel. But there's like no other commodity that's really like that. You know, if you went to Chicago and walked down State Street and asked somebody, hey, what's a barrel of crude? They might be able to tell you, but the other ones, not so much. So it's interesting that crude isn't like this big, massive bull market right now where some of these other commodities are.
Is there technical significance or some sort of significance in your mind that we can we call it a failure above $60 in
no,
the WTI?
I don't. If I had to make a guess, I'd say that some of these commodities still have some legs here. I still think there's just a lot of money out there that needs a place to go. And when they find a market that has a story like the corn market or the soybean market or now like the cattle market a little bit more recently, stock market, just seems like it attracts this liquidity that's out there. There's such a massive amount of dollars out there in circulation that has to find a home, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I don't want to pay $4 for gas this summer. That's no fun.
No, I don't either. I definitely think we're going to see higher gas prices in a month. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to take a month yet, but it's coming. It's coming.
That's why me and Ken were talking about. Why we were talking about ethanol a little bit, because I tend to think, and this is based on some conversations with people smarter than me, but I really think this ethanol thing could be really, really good. And you got to keep in mind that corn is, some of these ethanol plants are bidding like even for corn, like they're bidding $5.80, $5.90 a bushel for corn, and it still works because the ethanol price is good. So I think that I think that ethanol thing is just not something to sleep on.
No, certainly not. I'm just checking some gasoline prices right now. I was at an average of 278.9.
Yeah.
Here's Illinois at 307, Indiana 279.5. I think that Iowa 278, call it 279. I think we've got 30 cents in us in a month. I really do. Maybe
Illinois,
maybe
they
six
tax
weeks.
You to death. That's why it's so high. they tax you 10 different times. But yeah, I mean, nobody wants to pay that for gas, but that may be the price of the big economic recovery. I don't know.
Definitely. The other thing is, it's been interesting to see the way that OPEC is acting through this. They talked about production cuts and, well, were we going to cut production? Were we not? And mm-hmm. even some of their member states or, you know, member nations going a little bit rogue, or at least digging their heels in against production cuts. They're like, hey, man, we want some money. We need that oil money.
Isn't OPEC funny that there's just this group of people out there that basically just control the oil market and just decide when they make money or not? It's so bizarre. Like, if there was something like, I mean, it's just the one market that's totally, absolutely manipulated, and nobody like really seems to care at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it
beyond my control.
At the moment,
certainly.
It seems pretty quiet. It seems pretty quiet at the moment.
Yeah, but they move the market, though. They come out with one of these big headlines out of nowhere, which they do like several times a year. And boy, does the market move on that.
Yes, yes. And if they want, I feel like, maybe I'm overstating it, if they want $75 crude, they'll get it.
Oh, absolutely.
Fair statement?
Yeah, they've just got to balance it. There's got to be some semblance of like balance there. But, I mean, The big OPEC boys, they do get what they want. They say that there are people in those oil families that are actually like trillionaires. Like, you know how we think like the Amazon guy is the richest man in the world? Like, there's people way richer than him. They're just not public figures. Yeah. They own big oil, and they're like trillionaires. Trillionaires.
Yeah. So reports tomorrow, is the only surprising possibility going to be that the markets are surprised by the reports? Is that the potential for surprise?
If I could tell you what it was, it wouldn't be a surprise, Davis. That's the whole idea.
Oh, come on.
I always get asked that question. Like, the news people call me and they're like, well, where's the surprise going to be? Like, if I knew, it wouldn't be a surprise, buddy. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think tomorrow's report is just kind of it's a placeholder until we get to that June acreage report's the big one. But, you know, like Ken said, they may raise the export numbers. They may not. I don't know what they're going to do, but the market's going to start to focus a lot more on the new crop situation. I think that acreage deal at the end of June is going to be a big deal. Well, you guys, thanks, Davis. Thanks for having me, bud. Always fun to host. I don't know when Chip will
absolutely.
Be back, but I'm gone. This is it for me.
Tomorrow.
One and done.
Yeah. No, thanks for doing it, brother. Appreciate you.
See you guys. Bye.